This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today on the program, we're talking about doodling. Have you ever been told that doodling shows that you're not paying attention? Well, our guest Sonny Brown says that doodling involves a lot of the senses, movement, sound, visuals, and far from being a distraction, it actually can enhance learning.
I enjoy doodling on paper that has words on it already because it sort of creates an environment for me.
Do you ever get in trouble for doodling?
Yes.
What happens?
The teacher tells me to stop and that I shouldn't doodle and that it's unorganized and looks bad.
You just stop doodling?
Not really. I mean, sometimes I continue.
In secret?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
I don't do it as obviously. The teacher usually tells me that I shouldn't doodle after seeing my papers. They don't tell me to stop doodling in the middle of class.
That's Vigil Brandon, son of our producer, Heather Brandon. He's just one of millions of kids who are probably doodling on their notebooks right now. And a 2009 study from the University of Plymouth in England tells us they shouldn't stop. It found that people who doodle remember 29% more details than people who don't doodle while they listen. The reason? Well, doodling engages the brain so they don't daydream. Today, a doodle revolution in class and in the workplace. We'll be talking with expert doodlers, and we want to hear from you. Are you a doodler? How does it help you do what you do? You can call us at 860-275-7266. Again, 860-275-7266. You can email where we live at WNPR.org. And if you're on Twitter, we want to share doodles with you, and you can share your doodles with us. Tweet us at where we live with the hashtag WNPRDoodle, and we'll be sharing some of what's coming out of our studio today. I want to introduce our guests in studio first. Our friend Constanza Segovia is a designer at CoLab in Hartford. Many people know her for designing our Where We Live mug, a little doodle of me. And Constanza, thanks so much for being here again.
Thank you, Don.
I also want to welcome in Chris Piasek, who's a self-employed illustrator. He's based in Western Massachusetts. And Chris, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Roger Cameron is creative director at Lego in Enfield. Well, there's a creative job. We'll be talking about how you doodle around Legos in a bit. Roger, thanks for being here as well.
Right on. Thanks for having me.
I want to welcome in Sonny Brown, though. She's an info doodler and author of The Doodle Revolution, Unlock the Power to Think Differently. She's done TED Talks on this, and it's big business as well. Sonny, welcome to our show. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning.
So how do you define doodling, Sonny?
Oh, a good softball question. Thank you. I'm not yet awake. So there are, of course, and I want to hear from the panel too, because I have seen some of your work. And so the way that I define doodling in service to liberating the misperception of it is to make spontaneous marks with your mind and body to help yourself think. It's kind of a radical definition, but that's the one that I'm going for.
Making spontaneous marks. So this is interesting. So these spontaneous marks are something that some people just start doing without consciously knowing they're doing it, or are people purposely doodling? Maybe you can parse those two things out for me here.
Yeah, that's a really good question, because that one comes up a lot. So obviously, I think I was hearing a narrative from Heather's son before we got all together. And that was really heartbreaking. But so, yeah, there is natural spontaneity that children do. You can see it in children as they evolve visual language. They're naturally spontaneous, and there's not a lot of judgment about it, and they just kind of go. So that level of spontaneity is very high. And then, of course, there's people like, what was the Lego guy's name? I didn't catch it.
Okay, so Lego guy, here's Roger, and Roger. Yeah.
So what Roger does, you know, and I'm sure he can talk about it too.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it has a variation of spontaneity. So sometimes it's planned and it's very sort of scripted, which moves into the realm of drawing, you could say. And other times he may not know what his end game is, and so there's a little more organic, free-form, loose experimentation, which is, you know, in the realm of spontaneity. Does that answer the question?
I think it does. Well, Roger, why don't you pick up on that? I mean, maybe you can give us a little definition here and pick up on what Sonny's saying.
Sure. I think it's probably a mix of both. A lot of it is definitely unintentional and sort of you lose yourself in what you're, you know, doodling at the time. Mm-hmm. I think for myself and a lot of other creative people, it's how we breathe.
Yes.
A lot of times creatively. Yeah. So again, it's not always that end goal, as you said, but it's just sort of having that space to sort of play with the pen that you're using, or you know, just sort of the thoughts that you're having, and sort of it all comes together. But definitely most of it is just you know, not planned, I guess.
Well, and I think some of what we'll be talking about, Sonny, is the difference between people like me who doodle as part of a job that's sometimes creative and sometimes not. Other people don't have jobs that they consider to be creative at all, and they doodle. And then there's people who do it professionally as well. Maybe you can talk about those various ways that people doodle differently.
Right, because that's the thing, is that there is no really one definition. I mean, if you go to Google and you look up the word doodle, you're going to see a massive variation in what people even refer to as a doodle, which I think is fantastic because I don't want it to be a limiting experience, right? And honestly, most creatives kind of gravitate toward the natural expression of visual language instinctively, so they're not the target, per se, of the doodle revolution, but people who are working in environments that are suppressing creative thought and all of the other really valuable benefits that are derivative of doodling are people that I want to talk to and sort of inspire, because the creatives are already liberated to a certain extent. But yeah, the fact is that doodling is not just for artistic and creative types. It's for people who need to think better, who need to solve problems, who need to retain information, and so forth. So it has a lot of unseen values that I think should be talked about, you know, and understood.
We're talking about the power of doodling on the program today to unlock creativity and much more. You can join us at 860-275-7266, and we're sharing some doodles online as well. Use the hashtag WNPRDoodle when you tweet at Where We Live. Let's go to Garnet, who's calling from Hamden. Hi there. You're on Where We Live.
Hi. How you doing?
Doing well. What's up?
Well, you know, this talk about doodling, I did a paper at Harvard for my creativity course, sociology, and I was told to choose a luminary, and I chose Theodore Seuss Geisel, Dr. Seuss. Turns out Dr. Seuss, while he was at Oxford, was a major doodler.
Yes.
Got him in trouble, and it was instrumental in, along with the recall of his childhood, it was instrumental in his becoming actually who he was.
I love it.
That's a really interesting story.
Yeah, he found that to be therapeutic too later in life.
Interesting, Garnet. Thank you so much for sharing that. So this is something you know, Sonny. This is a great story. Dr. Seuss was a doodler. He turned out okay.
Dr. Seuss. Yes, exactly. Yes, and actually, a lot of our most celebrated brainiacs are also doodlers. You know, so it's like if you unearth some of the notebooks of our most celebrated thinkers, it's very unusual to find a notebook where there's not some doodling in the margins or even on the full page. So that's another sort of secret that people don't really talk about.
Before we get to another phone call, maybe I'll ask the rest of our panelists, Chris and Constanza, to give us some definitions of their own and how they use doodling. Chris, talk about how you use it in your own work, in your own life.
Sure. Sometimes it's improvised and I don't really know where I'm going or what I'm doing, but other times I'll draw things that I draw often, but it's still kind of therapeutic and relaxing because I'm not really thinking about it. It's just things that I draw often, like little goofy little monsters or letters or things like that.
So the goofy little monsters, I mean, in your line of work, do those goofy little monsters that come out when you're not really paying attention, do they turn into actual real monsters that you draw for work later? Or how does it work?
Yeah, sure. I post a daily drawing on my website every day so that, you know, when I do these little monsters, sometimes potential clients will see them and be like, oh, we really like these monsters, so will you use them in this campaign? So I'll kind of work them into some other treatment that involves everything.
Constanza, is there maybe a worry here that as we talk with these creatives, people who are designers, people like yourself and Chris and Roger, that, you know, people are going to start thinking about good doodling versus bad doodling? Like, you know, a real creative type who's a professional drawer might do a doodle that you could show to someone and say, wow, that's really cool. A lot of us just kind of doodle in the margins. We make little squiggles, and no one should ever see this again. Is there a worry, perhaps, that we're talking too much about good doodling versus bad doodling already?
I think there is a worry, but there shouldn't be. The beauty of it for me and I think for the general person is that there is no pressure involved. So whether you end up with something that is worth while, you know, say a client sees it or it's something that you are pleased with and you're going to use with something else, it's just not the intention going in. And I think that's the key element of having it be an enjoyable, relaxing experience.
So tell us how you doodle, how this comes naturally for you.
So I've always doodled. When I was hearing Vigil earlier telling his story, I mean, that was me when I was in school, and I was always kind of secret doodling, and I would get in trouble all the time. And I kind of learned to not do that anymore. And, you know, I really thought that it was a bad thing to do. And then when I was older, I realized that, you know, I found myself doing it again, and I was actually reprimanded in high school, and I At that point, I was old enough that I realized that I actually was paying attention and that there was nothing wrong with it. So I spoke up, and that was kind of my moment of realization that this was not only me just having fun drawing because I like to draw, but just actually a tool to help me concentrate. And that if I wasn't doodling, I was doing something else, but it was actually counterproductive to paying attention or following the conversation.
And Sunny's done a lot of work on this, and we'll get through this a little bit, but does this resonate with you, Chris, this idea that if you're doing something with your hands, you're actually drawing something on a piece of paper, your mind isn't wandering because you're engaged somehow?
Yeah, totally. Sometimes I'll just be drawing random shapes, like repeated over and over again while I'm listening, and for some reason that helps me to kind of focus in on what's being talked about. Or even just doodling something that's relating to the topic at hand will help me kind of relate what I'm doing with my hands to what I'm thinking about and help me process it.
I want to get to some more calls. Dawn's in New London. Hi, Dawn. Go ahead. You're on Where We Live.
Yes, I'm in New London, and I'm 83 years old. I was doodling in high school because I was bored years ago, and I ended up going to art school in Hartford and becoming an art teacher because of that freedom of being able to doodle. And I still splatter the paper with paint and then create images from the splatter. But that's kind of a doodling technique.
Don, thank you so much for sharing your doodling technique. I like that very much. I got a call from Kieran, who's calling from Hartford as well. Hi, Kieran. Go ahead.
How are you doing? I'm on my way to work. I hope you can hear me okay.
Sure can, yeah.
I just caught part of the conversation as I was driving in, and it really resonated with me on two levels. One is I was helping my 12-year-old daughter with her homework last night, and she was doodling while we were talking. And she said, I said, well, stop doing that. And she said, it helps me think. And I realized she's absolutely right. It's a great way to sort of distract yourself while you're trying to understand something else. And I'm a designer myself, and I used to be an illustrator, and now I'm a graphic designer for corporate America, and they're very different things. But what one of your guests said earlier also really worked with me in that one of my favorite ways to draw today, when I get a chance to, is to doodle on a napkin with a felt tip pen. And that's specifically those two things, because with a felt tip pen on a napkin, you can't stay in any place for any time at all, or you rip the napkin or it sucks up the ink. And I never know what I'm going to draw when I start. It's just the pen hits the napkin and it starts to move. And it just always ends up being a fun and experience, and I come up with a lot of nice ideas that way.
Well, thank you very much, and a lot of us have kept those napkins. Of course, what I do is I keep the napkins that I doodle on, and then about 2 months later, I take them out and I say to myself, what the hell did that mean? I don't know if this ever happens to you, Roger, where you're doing something and you think that maybe through what you've drawn on a piece of paper, there's some sort of an epiphany. Maybe you've come up with a great idea or a great image, and then you look back at it later, and outside of that moment that you are creating it, there's almost no context. It's hard to see what it is you were trying to do at the time. Does that ever happen to you?
Yeah, I think a lot of times I keep all my doodles. I try and sort of keep them arranged, and I'll definitely go back and look at them, and that's where you do find a lot of, like, hidden gems, you know, just moments in time that you've captured, or, you know, something funny that came up and you sort of jotted it down or made an illustration of it. So it's almost like a timeline, a visual timeline sometimes, to just sort of go back and look through that stuff. And I think in terms of the way I sort of build out my doodles, they tend to be very busy. So there's a lot of layers to them. So again, it's real fun for myself to go back and look, and then I actually enjoy sharing those with others because they usually find something that makes them laugh or something like that. So
we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about the power of doodling actually to unlock creativity, to help you concentrate. It's not the sort of thing that you should be telling your kids, stop doing. You should actually be telling them, well, that's okay, doodle a little bit more. Our guest on the phone, Sunny Brown, has a book called The Doodle Revolution, Unlock the Power to Think Differently. We're also going to take your phone calls at 860-275-7266. And if you're on Twitter, you can send us your doodles. We're sharing some of ours at Where We Live with the hashtag WNPRDoodle. Thank you. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're talking about something that a lot of us do, but we very rarely think about. It's doodling, doodling on a piece of paper during a boring meeting or maybe a long class. Some people think, well, that's just being distracted. That's not very serious work. But actually, doodling can unlock creativity. It can help you concentrate. There's a lot of people who are in our studio today thinking about and doodling even as we speak. You can doodle along with us. If you're on Twitter, use the hashtag WNPRDoodle. On the phone with us is Sonny Brown, who's an info doodler and author of The Doodle Revolution, Unlock the Power to Think Differently. We'll get back to some of our guests in studio in just a moment. But Sonny, I want you to pick up on this idea of helping people concentrate. This is something that's important not just for kids in class, but also for people in businesses. This idea that, actively engaging your hands and your eyes and your mind all at the same time is something that, that's good for us, not actually a distraction.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you think about modern society, the gadgetry and the sort of what people refer to as continuous partial attention, meaning that it's like we're lucky if we can get somebody sitting with us at dinner who's actually paying attention to us for 2 minutes or more. So interestingly, doodling, while it's a low-tech strategy, I think it's become more relevant in today's society because focus and concentration is one of the things that people are now looking to regain. So it's that I think that's a nice sort of byproduct of an ancient practice, and so I think that that's worth noting. You know,
talk a bit about visual language. Is this something that we're losing a little bit in our worlds right now?
Yes, and it depresses me. And so it's part of the reason that the revolution was born, because I know that there's all kinds of revolutions, the Orange Revolution, but this is really an attempt to reintegrate very native practices into our thinking processes around the world, and it is significant. For example, most children, as we talked about a little bit earlier, are naturals at expressing themselves using visual language, and then there's a notable point where they just drop completely off of that curve, and usually that occurs either when a parent or someone who's important to them says something about it not being appropriate or not being it being a waste of their time. And then the other point is when they go into institutions like in most schools. And then the higher education is troublesome at best. And then, of course, work does nothing to reinforce it. So you see this significant drop-off, but there's no benefit to the drop-off. And it's all cost, you know. And so it's baffling to me why we would continue to encourage people to get really literate and read and write and learn how to navigate, the social media. And meanwhile, this instinctive, very powerful, very cognitively appropriate skill that is available to everybody is kind of, I can't use the word bastardized, can I?
Well, you just did, and I think it's fine.
It's not really a curse word if it's in a verb, is it? But, and so that is troublesome. That is a problem, because it gives people access to all parts of their minds that are unavailable otherwise, and that's why I'm sort of very passionate about it.
And just to be clear, there are some curse words that are verbs. We won't say those either. Let's go to the phones. Robert is calling from Oxford. Hi, Robert. Go ahead. You're on Where We Live.
Good morning. I have two comments, one about concentrating and one about what goes on in the margins. Pardon me. I taught art for 35 years. I actually still teach it, and from kindergarten to graduate school. And I really encouraged people to doodle because when your person was just talking about engaging the entire brain, listening and writing down notes and things, that's a very left brain endeavor. Mm-hmm. Doodling is a very right brain endeavor. And if you're doodling while you're doing all of the other things, you're engaging the entire brain. And yeah. So often our right side isn't engaged at all, especially as she was just saying in school, it is not particularly encouraged.
But let me ask you a question, Robert, and you'd sure. be a good person to answer this. Do you think that at some point, if you're supposed to be taking notes in class, and taking notes is important, in my job I'm supposed to take notes all the time because as I'm listening I'm trying to glean specific things that people are saying that I might want to use later. Are these two actions contrary to one another? Is doodling sometimes taking the place of taking good notes and the other way around?
No, I would disagree with that entirely. As a matter of fact, there's been a fair amount of research that talks about the fact that teenagers especially are able to, we denote as multitasking, but a lot of times it helps kids to concentrate if they have the TV on, the radio on, and they're doing their homework.
Mm.
We as adults may have more difficulty with it, but their brains, as they're developing, they are intaking all of this material, and they can process it differently.
Well, Robert, thank you very much. And multitasking is, of course, one thing that we've talked about on the show before, and this is an important thing. Sonny, you want to pick up on that a little bit? I mean, the point that I was trying to make is sometimes I look back at my notes, and they're actually doodles. They're not useful to me anymore. It helped to engage my brain at the time, but I realize, oh, my goodness, I didn't write down that guy's phone number.
Right, so that's so fantastic. Is Constanza on the phone still?
Yeah, but Constanza's right here sitting next to me.
Okay, because, I looked at your notes. Heather sent me some. And I noticed that your doodles, and I noticed that you integrate lettering and imagery and shapes. And so I think that you're a very advanced doodler. And so I was wanting to loop you into the conversation because I think that there's something you could probably say about what you retain when you are doing those pretty well sophisticated notes.
It's interesting because for me, and that's what I was saying before, is that I don't think anybody should feel pressured to do a certain quality of doodle, and I think we all agree on that. But for me, it's a mix of, helping me. It helps me pay attention. It helps me retain some information. For example, when we are at one of those radio listening parties, the Ear Cave, I actually take down names of people that I want to, look up, URLs that are mentioned. So it is actually note taking. But it's also, because of what I do every day, it's a way to, practice lettering and develop certain things. Just have fun without the pressure of, expecting the product to be anything. So it's a really fun mix of things that I'm doing while I'm enjoying this other thing that is happening that is really...
I saw your notes and I was like, I should hire her.
Yes.
John, can I add one thing, too?
Absolutely.
Interestingly, every learner is very different, right? So sometimes I'll talk to teachers, and I get calls from teachers all over the world, and they'll call and they'll say, I have this student. He's incredibly bright. What I'm concerned about is that I see him drawing spaceships when I'm talking about the Civil War. And so she says, should I intervene? Should I ask him to sort of occupy his hands in another way? And I usually ask them to look at the results. So I'm like, how is this kid doing in class otherwise, right? Because for some people, probably like Roger, when he's drawing some image, even if there's no language associated with it, the fact that he's so engaged because he's producing something visual allows him to remember things better. For other people, they need to tag what they're drawing to the content. So if the teacher's talking about the Civil War, then they need to probably draw, bayonets or things of that are associated iconography that would link it back. And then they can also add language to it to give them, triggers, because, when you look at an image, if you go back to an image that has no associated language, it's very subjective. There's no way to know for you sometimes and definitely not for other outside people what you're talking about. So that's part of the integration, what I refer to as infodoodling, which is where you integrate language so that clarity is still there and you're tagging it to external content.
But just so we understand, for all the parents who are listening out there, and we're going to hear from some of them in just a moment at 860-275-7266, if the child is drawing a spaceship while you're talking about the Civil War, I'll just use my own experience here. If I'm really honest with myself, in large part, I would be doing that as a child because I'd rather be thinking about spaceships than what you're telling me right now. And right. That's what parents and teachers see. They see someone who is otherwise occupied, who'd rather be thinking about the baseball game or the spaceship as opposed to the very important thing that I'm saying right now.
Right. Right. And what I would say to them is that the probability of that student, even if they are drawing spaceships versus drawing Civil War iconography, is that they're probably retaining more than were they not doing that. So I'm not saying they shouldn't address the circumstances and hope and ask the student, and we train people to do this, to tie imagery to auditory content. But in all probability, if the kid is getting lost in thoughts, they're probably better off at least allowing them to engage their hands and sometimes their physical body if they're standing and working, and their visual cortex and their eyes. Otherwise, they're just going to have left the building completely. They're going to look like model students, like sitting still and or taking left brain notes, but they're not going to be, nothing's going on upstairs, So it's very counterintuitive, but that's what I think. That's what I've seen.
Let's go to the phones again. I first want to read an email from Heidi who says, I'm a high school English teacher and a doodler. I encourage it so long as it helps focus. I doodle through meetings to help me focus. Mm-hmm. This show is inspiring me to think of ways to actually incorporate doodling into a lesson because it can certainly help us think from a different perspective, giving us an idea we haven't had before. You can join us with emails at wherewelive@wnpr.org. Let's go to Carol, who's calling from Southbury. Hi there, Carol. You're on Where We Live.
Hi. I have two quick questions. I was wondering if there's ever been any analysis done of what people doodle, because all my life I've doodled, except recently since I've become retired. I don't. But there's a theme. I always do the same thing when I doodle. And I wondered if there was any study done of what people doodle and what it means. And my other question is, if you're familiar with Zentangle, which I invested a lot of money in to get these books and everything, and it's sort of a directed doodling, and I don't like it. I don't know if you're familiar with it. I'm just curious to hear what your guest has to say about that.
Well, thank you very much for the question. So, Sunny, do you know about the Zentangle? Is that what she said?
Yeah, it's pretty popular, and I haven't really engaged in it myself, but a lot of people keep sending me theirs, and I didn't realize it was directed, so that's interesting to know, because there are different outcomes based, you know, relative to spontaneity, free form versus directed, but it's interesting she doesn't like it. She's got experience with the great joy of the blissfulness of uncertain doodling, you know, so that's interesting.
Well, and she also asked about something that I knew was going to come up, and this is important. It's the doodling analysis, like handwriting analysis. Does this tell me something about my relationship with my father, or does this tell me something about what I might do in 20 years? I mean, people look at this stuff pretty seriously. Is there something to it?
Well, so I don't like to – I know people enjoy – and I too enjoy horoscopes and party, you know, tricks and realistically, you can't deduce anything from visual language with any certainty unless you spend time with someone for probably 15 or 20 years and you have an intensive understanding of their psychology. So I wanted to ask the lady, what does she doodle just for fun, right? Because some people are like, I doodle treble clefs. I'm like, you're probably a musician, you know? But I'm not astute at that. And there is a fun book called Everybody's Pixelated that came out in the 1930s when it was totally cool to just say hokey, crazy things about doodling. And I bet she would love it because it's such a fun book. He tries to codify what visual language means. So, Roger, when you were saying that your stuff was really sophisticated, has many layers, he actually tries to break down what those mean in terms of psychology, which is fun, but it's not, you know, it's a pseudoscience in certain ways, you know.
Yeah, and I'm actually looking across the table here at one of Roger's doodles. Can you just hand me the piece of paper here so I can see? And you say, you know, they're very complex. Everything's very tightly packed, and it's individual characters, one on top of another, next to another. As you look at these, Roger, are you telling a story here? What I mean, when you look back at this, can you deduce, aha, here's what my brain was thinking at this time? Is there a narrative?
Not particularly.
Not particularly?
No, I mean, and in case of the whole analysis thing, it's like, it's an open book. I mean, I'm not. Go ahead, go for it. I'd love to hear what people think of that. It would be funny to put that in front of people. But
absolutely, people send them to me and they're like, "Am I a sex addict?" I'm like, "I don't know. I mean, it looks like it. I mean, I don't know.
It looks like it.
It is kind of fun. Absolutely. Oh, you know what I did want to say too is that you can deduce certain states of mind. Like, do you guys remember when Bill Gates' doodle came out and it was a big scandal? This is like 5 years ago, but somebody was talking during a forum, a big world forum, and he was doodling, and you know, you could tell that he was kind of agitated. So you can tell certain emotional states, like a calmness or agitation, and sometimes you have context, like John Kennedy left a bunch of doodles when he was talking about Fidel Castro and the Cuban Missile Crisis, and he was clearly irritated. So you can tell stuff like that, but you can't really tell, like, if you hate your mom and, you know.
Well, I think the other thing that our caller Carol was getting at, and I wanted to ask you about this, Chris, are there certain forms or ideas that you draw over and over and over again, just the same character that just if you sit there and you're doodling, it's going to be this little guy or this little figure over and over?
It's usually a mix of things. Often there's a lot of letters, but there are certain little monsters, and I think I just draw them because they're flexible to spaces. I like to work within the negative space of my piece of paper. Like, if there's other words on the page and there's like an empty space, I draw things that I'll fill that space. So it's like I'm kind of not really thinking about it. I'm just filling the page so I can kind of think about what I'm doing.
Do you ever move on to one thing that you've drawn and say, that's done now, I'm going to go on to the next thing that I doodle? Or do you continually fill in the spaces on that one little character that you've drawn?
I tend to think about filling the page more than finishing the little monster because they're usually pretty simple.
Yeah,
so it's like goal-oriented. oriented.
Well, yeah. Wait, and that's something, Constanza. I wanted to ask you about this because this is something I found with my own doodling. If I really analyze what I do, I end up ruining things that are beautiful because I have to keep adding to them, and then you just throw it away because. And this may say something about my personality or my creativity, but I draw something and I can't stop drawing that one thing. How do you do it, Constanza?
I have such an internal battle because I really don't want to be self-conscious, but I go back and forth. Sometimes I'll get mad at myself because I'm like, oh, wow, this kind of just happened, but it's nice. And then I'll always take it too far and ruin it. But then I tell myself that it doesn't matter, that it wasn't supposed to be anything. And, yeah, this is all happening in my head as I'm drawing.
One of my great disappointments today was preparing for the show. I had saved what I thought was the best doodle I'd ever done for quite some time, and I threw it away in a purging of my office, and I realized I can't find it anymore. And I really wanted to show you because I was so proud of that one doodle. I can't even really explain it. Well, it seemed to work in a number of different ways. And when I went back and looked at it, I thought, well, that was pretty cool. But there you go. You want to join us, 860-275-7266. Phil's in West Hartford. Hi, Phil. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. This is kind of related to what people were just talking about with different styles of doodling. When I was growing up, I developed this very distinctive geometric style, which people remarked on in high school. And one day, I remember very vividly, I must have been about 14, I was sitting in my dad's office, and I noticed he had these doodles that were, like, identical to mine.
That's amazing.
And it was a really eerie moment, and I was sort of looking through his papers and seeing these same shapes. And I'm wondering, is there any genetic component here? Have you heard of this before?
Well, first of all, that's a great question, Phil. And Sonny, this is another one of those things. It's obvious that people's handwriting does tend to mimic that of their parents for whatever reason or others that are close to them. Is there something to what Phil's saying?
I think that is a fascinating topic of study. And I'll tell you my own little personal anecdote about that because I haven't seen any research on the genetic inheritance of visual language. I wouldn't be surprised. But I am going to fixatedly look that up. But I'll tell you, I met my own dad when I was 35. I'm 36 now. And I met him. I didn't have any contact with him, and that's a whole other show. But we both had a fixation with calligraphy. And he was an inveterate doodler, and he doodled on napkins. He was an entrepreneur and a bar owner. I was like, oh, we have that in common. But anyway, and he also was a napkin doodler, and he was obsessed with calligraphy. And I was like, what? Why would something so specific, you know, be inherited? I mean, we live in Texas. It's not like Japanese calligraphy is all over the place, you know. It's like you have to find it. So I would not be surprised if there was definitely something to the transmission of it, just like any other trait. Like you have a preference for classical music. I mean, fields of epigenetics are going to start showing really strange things that we inherit from our families.
Let's go to Elise, who's calling from New Britain. Hi there. You're on Where We Live.
Hi. Now that the conversation switched over to the genetic inheritance of doodling, I could also confirm that my mom's doodles and my doodles look really similar. But what I originally called for is that I doodled a lot, and sadly I feel like I'm not doodling as much anymore. But I became a classroom teacher, and that's one of the things that I really allowed my students to do. Is to doodle. It was one of the things that I really felt helped them to listen just from personal experience. I didn't have any, anything scientific to back my suspicions except for my own, what I could relate to, which was that doodling for me always grounded me. And it allowed me to pay attention at faculty meetings or in classes or things like that. And if I wasn't doodling, then I was tapping my pencil or shifting in my seat or thinking about something else or daydreaming or whatever it was. But I clearly could not tell you what was going on at the meeting or in class. Mm-hmm. And yet when I doodled, I knew exactly what was going on.
Well, Elise, thank you very much for sharing that. Sonny, before we take a break, maybe you can just talk through this idea of actually harnessing this for companies, this idea that maybe it's not just making it okay in the workplace to doodle, but that a good corporation not just one that creates stuff like Lego, like Roger does, but any corporation might be able to harness this power somehow, direct people's energy, and get them doodling so they're actually more productive.
Yeah, I mean, because I've been immersed in this, in sort of studying and teaching this for so long, it is starting to become really befuddling to me why there's resistance and or misunderstandings around it in any organizational culture. It's kind of like saying, oh, I know there's this skill available to all of my employees. I know that it doesn't require artistic talent. I know that it has great benefits like insights and information retention and communication and expression, but I think I'm going to just be prejudiced about it because I don't know anything. You know, it's like it makes no sense. And so there are what I would love to invite people to do is to A, relinquish the idea that doodling is not appropriate and that it has no value, and consider that it is actually incredibly valuable and that it can be moved into areas of exploration that are extremely beneficial for employees and for companies, you know, altogether.
We're talking about a doodle revolution on the program today. If you want to join us, 860-275-7266. You can email wherewelive@wnpr.org. And as we go to a break, you can also tweet us your doodles right now. If you're doodling along during the show, as you're taking notes or listening along, you can doodle at Where We Live with the hashtag WNPRDoodle. We'll be right back. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up tomorrow, you can join us live at the University of Connecticut. Of course, they call it UConn these days. We'll be out in stores, and we'll be talking with President Susan Herbst live at the Student Union. If you have questions about anything that's happening in the world of UConn, including a lot of stuff that's been in the news recently, you can join us live there from the Student Union, a conversation with President Susan Herbst at UConn tomorrow, Where We Live. Today we're talking about doodling. A doodle revolution is part of what Sunny Brown does. She's an info doodler. Her book is The Doodle Revolution, Unlock the Power to Think Differently. You can take a look at her TED Talks and other things. She joins us by phone today. Joining us in studio is Chris Biasek, who's a self-employed illustrator who is based in Western Massachusetts. Roger Cameron is a creative director at Lego, and Constanza Segovia is a designer at Colab in Hartford, who's worked with us on our Ear Cave events that happen in and around Hartford, where we do listening sessions, and she doodles along. We've got lots of people calling up with their doodling ideas. One thing I know you wanted to talk about, Chris, is this idea of there's doodling and there's scribbling. What's the difference to you?
Well, sometimes I really like doodling, and I'll get too caught up in my own head and like what I'm actually going to draw, so I'll just scribble on the page and then see where that leads me. I'll look at the negative space and see what shapes are made for my scribble and maybe just fill them in. It's a way to doodle without really thinking too much about it.
Oh, that's interesting. Can you take us through, and I'm going to ask Roger Constanza this too quickly, but can you take us through a process where a doodle that you did turned into something that was actually a real product for you, something that you made that was a commercial success?
Well, I don't know specifically. Sometimes I'll do one of these scribble drawings and fill it in completely and maybe fill the whole thing, and I'll turn it into a pattern, and then maybe I'll use that pattern for a product like an iPhone case or something like that that people seem to like.
and that's interesting, because as I'm looking over here to the left, I can't see your doodles because of my computer screen, but all of Roger's doodles, I love these. They're patterns. They'd be great wallpaper here. I love these things. Tell us maybe a story from you, Roger, a time when you were doodling and it turned into something that you then made at Lego.
Yeah, I don't know if I can necessarily point to something that sort of became something at Lego per se from the doodles, but definitely the doodles have really turned into a lot of things, maybe more on the side project end of it. You know, a lot of the doodles I've done have become T-shirts or skateboard graphics or things like that. So a lot of times people will look through and they'll just sort of zero in on something like, oh, that would be a cool graphic, you know, for the next T-shirt or whatever for the skate shop or something like that. So, you know, I'll work with them to sort of, scan it in and, you know, add the color and this, that. But yeah, a lot of stuff sort of comes out of the big sort of big puzzle piece that ends up being the paper. Sometimes elements will come out of that and become separate graphics.
Yeah. How about you, Constance? Do you have some experiences with this?
Yeah, I think generally, so not specific products, but for example, the Where We Live mug was something that came up because of my experience with the Ear Cave, and that's how, you know, we started talking about doing a drawing. I think it's opened up new opportunities for me, and in a way that was totally unexpected because, like I said before, I've been doing this my whole life. But somehow it's sharing a part of what I do that I didn't think had a lot of external value, but apparently it does, and it looks decent. But yeah, like I would do it regardless. It's interesting when people say, wow, that's so cool, that's amazing, and it's like just notes and, you know.
And hopefully we're coming up with dates for a new Ear Cave pretty soon. If people have never done this, Constanza live doodles these radio events, and it becomes a part of the experience, another texture that we add to listening in on the radio. Let's go to some more phone calls here. Kelly's in Wyndham. Hi, Kelly. Go ahead.
Hi there. I'm calling first with two kind of takes on this. First of all, I'm a human resources professional, so I run orientation for new employees, and I've usually judged people right off the bat, even though I try not to, when they're doodling while
I'm
talking.
Good for you for being honest.
It's kind of sad that there's such a stigma to that after I'm listening to all of this. The other thing is that I have a degree in psychology, and I've learned that if you're using a particular type of pen or wearing something in particular that you wore when you learned the material, mm-hmm. that if you do the same thing when you're testing on it, it actually makes those connections in your brain, and
right.
and you're able to remember the material better. So it's just a very interesting topic I'm listening to this morning.
Well, thank you very much. And I know, Sunny, you were in the background. You're sort of rooting her on for being honest about that in the human resources department.
Well, it takes a lot of bravery to acknowledge our biases, right? I mean, sometimes they're not even obvious to ourselves until somebody presents a stimulus to us that is a doodle, and then they're like, I have a lot of resistance to this because of these beliefs that I don't have. So I'm impressed with her. And also HR people are perfect people to introduce a new way of thinking into an organization, which I love. And I wanted to say, if I can just like throw one more thing out.
Yeah.
Remember when we started talking about what is the definition of doodling? And I referred to it as, and I really want to change it in the dictionary. And I want you guys to call in and help me do that. But, if you think of it as to make spontaneous marks with your mind and your body to help yourself think, then that's a really expansive definition. And so when you ask the question of do some of your doodles result in things in the world, if you think about it in a bigger space where it's essentially doodling is like a cognitive effort to think through something in a way that may not otherwise have been available to you, then really the product of doodling is manifested in any number of things. Like, think about this. I call people kinesthetic doodlers, people who move in order to think. There are lots of kids like that, right? They're usually labeled ADD, but they're probably people who have a lot of energetic, they have a need to process information energetically and physically. And so I call those people kinesthetic doodlers. And Steve Jobs was a kinesthetic doodler. He made all kinds of design decisions and all kinds of organizational decisions by taking these long, meandering walks. And so I think that there are things in the world that exist because of doodling that we wouldn't even associate with it because we don't think of it as something that is what it really is, which is a very valuable way to process information and get insights.
So you're basically saying doodling is everything. It is all of human creation. So you just
we
blew
are
my
all
mind.
Here because of the doodle.
Excellent. And that's where we live for the day. Let's go to Lou in Rocky Hill. Hi, Lou. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to state that I'm an incessant doodler and have been my whole life. But while listening to the show, I got thinking there's two kinds of doodles that I do. One, when I'm bored, is more creative and I start drawing characters and things of that sort. But I notice when I'm doodling and I'm trying to focus on a conversation, they're much more pattern-based and much more mathematical and almost fractal. And I was wondering if there's certain parts of the brain that are used different ways, or what her opinion is on that.
Okay, Sunny, what do you think?
Yeah, so when I'm glad that he mentioned different parts of the brain, because that's part of why doodling is powerful, because it's ultimately igniting different neural networks. And so I can't say this with certainty, but my guess is that he's moving more into a linear left brain modality when he's trying to focus and concentrate, and for whatever reason, it's appropriate for that learner to do that, right? So it's not so different types of engagement do trigger different networks and parts of the brain that need to be lit up in order to be engaged fully. So that just seems to be a strategy that he's found that works for him.
So I have to ask a few more questions. We got more callers, and we just have a few minutes left. But one of the things I have to ask is, you know, I used to do this show with a whole bunch of papers in front of me. because we had to print out all of our scripts and all of the notes, and then we'd do the show like that. And a few years ago, we decided to save paper and we got iPads. And now we all have iPads or iPhones or something. Is the digital revolution killing doodling? I mean, Roger, what do you think about this? Because you've got a few devices open right now, and yeah, you can draw on them, but is it the same as drawing on paper?
No, it's definitely not the same as drawing on paper, but it's a fun alternative, and it really becomes just another medium. So the stylus and the iPad has, you know, there's fun apps to play with that give you different pen options or paintbrush options, and sort of each one is like, you know, just different sort of test driving different cars, if you will. You know, it's sort of it's fun to sort of just rip around on the paper or the screen and just sort of feel out like how it reacts and responds. And, you know, I think it's just another area to play, and it is sort of convenient in that a lot of times, like to your point before, does anything that you create end up becoming something? When you're drawing directly on like an iPad, you've already digitized whatever your doodle is. And so then it's like really easy to bring into something like Illustrator and add color or scale it or, you know, turn it into a graphic. So I think from that standpoint, it's really fun to, you know, sort of use that, the new emerging technologies for doodling. But at the end of the day, there's really no substitute for the pen and the paper and, you know, I think where you started out. But
well, and that's what I kind of want to get at, Sonny, is this idea that, yes, Roger's a designer and he's got this, stylus that he's writing on his iPad with, but a lot of us don't have that, and a lot of us are immersed in our screens all the time. I seem to be typing more than I'm writing anymore. Do you think that that could be the death of doodling?
I think that is both a danger and an opportunity. I mean, I embrace digital gadgetry because I have to because of my work, but the tactility and the sort of like the visceral sense of having a three-dimensional sort of like thing scraping across paper is very powerful for people. That said, to Roger's point, it is a medium, right? So it's just, and you could look at it as just another way to engage. Now, typing is a whole different thing. I was still referring to styluses. But what I notice is that the problem with screens, what I call the screen invasion, is that there's too many options on there. So when we were referring to focus and concentration and partial attention, those things do not facilitate attention. So, because I'm sitting, if I'm typing, I got a ping from Facebook, I got a notification from my calendar. So it doesn't do one of the beautiful things that doodling does, which is allows people to slow it down, sit still quietly for a moment, and have this experience that is unadulterated by, you know, buzzes.
Well, and Constanza, you were nodding your head as she was saying this.
Yeah, I mean, that's the power of doodling for me. It's the simplicity of putting pen to paper and just it's just this two elements. That's all it is. And I, because it's a device that I use to help me concentrate, I mean, opening up my iPhone or my iPad is just the end of that. I am all of a sudden all over the internet and seeing other things.
You have a thought, Chris?
Well, I have kind of a counter argument. I think that there is an argument that they could be helping because a lot of people are using these new apps that you can doodle with who normally wouldn't doodle. And things like games like Draw with Friends, where you have to draw something, the other person has to guess what it is. I think people who don't normally doodle are using this to kind of visually communicate, and it's a way to get their brain thinking in a way that they might not normally.
I got an email from Beverly quickly because we're running low on time. We're teachers who play pass the doodle during professional development to try and stay focused. It helps us draw to pay attention. She sent a sample drawing. I know Stanley from Middletown wanted to share a story about that, but we've run out of time. I want to thank all of our doodlers here. Constanza Segovia from Colab, Roger Cameron from Lego, Chris Piasek. Thank you all so much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
And thanks to Sonny Brown, The Doodle Revolution, Unlock the Power to Think Differently. You can find more on her website. Thank you so much, Sonny, for doing this and for doodling along with us today.
Oh, anytime.
And you can continue this conversation online. Just why don't you send your doodles at Where We Live with the hashtag WNPRDoodle. I'm John Dankosky. This is Where We Live.